Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I have Sean in studio. The show is about what matters most in our life, our mind, our thoughts, our feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. So in this show, I'll bring you the latest research about the researchers have identified the neural processes that make some memories fade rapidly, while other memories persist over time. I know mine is going rapidly. So I don't know about you guys, but everybody who I'm speaking with, they're complaining about this. So maybe the researchers will tell us something. Then I will speak to my first guest. Her name is Behnoosh Babzani. She's a social entrepreneur, public speaker, and an author. And she's going to talk to you about her life-changing illness and resiliency and recovery and how she's utilizing that in betterment of her life and everyone around her. And then my second guest will be Danny Zaino, actor, producer, TV, and radio host. He's a combat choreographer for the motion pictures and television industries. And we're going to talk about his work and post-traumatic stress disorder because he was also a vet. You can call us on the studio line if you'd like to talk to any of us, 951-922-3532. And be sure to listen to my podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and share with your friends. Go sign up, subscribe, give your comments there, tell your friends. And I think that would be wonderful for me to hear from you. Now, most of the time at this time, I will tell you the tip of the week. So this week, I've been working with fear. Yes, mine, it shows up everywhere, even in my dreams. And most of my clients this week have really focused on fear, maybe because mine was up this week, so I was really noticing theirs. It shows up instantly. It lingers. It catches you in your dreams, like mine, and wakes you up from it. It's a strong emotion that at times debilitates you. The emotion of fear is a signal for you to take care of yourself. It is telling you that either there is danger around you in the present moment, or by some of your decision-making, danger will show up in the future. So trying to tell you that uncomfortableness is around the corner, do something now. Come on, do something. Fear will show up in your body. Your breathing will become shallow. Your stomach, your shoulders, your jaws, or whole body might get even weak or experience pain. Some people become numb and lose functionality. Some will ignore it and have anxiety or panic attacks. Some will ignore it and have nightmares or get insomnia. Some will ignore it and will have physical pain all over their body. Some people in their heads or shoulders or back pains are a lot with the intensity of fear. And for some who ignore their fear, they find themselves not being attentive all day to any of the daily activities and lose their productivity and momentum. So what do we do with this important emotion that we all have? And it's a natural emotion. Well, first of all, respect it. Listen to it. See what the message is for you. And don't let it stop you. After understanding the message of the fear, let's do a reality check with what really is at stake. Is the fear real? Is the fear due to something that is happening now, or just the fear from the past or a future that has not happened? Is the fear from the days that you did not have the skills to handle what is in front of you and your system has really not integrated all that you have learned? Is there a skill that you actually have to learn to handle what is in front of you? Can you see what the worst possible scenario is and see if you can tolerate it or survive it or handle it? Is it a matter which there is no action needed and you just need to accept what is and come to terms with it? Let's now focus on your strengths and resiliency and bring them into the picture and action. With the strength, knowledge, wisdom, resources that you have today, how can you handle the matter that you're facing? Who can you get support to handle what you need? What do you need to do to take care of yourself? And what do you need to do to handle the situation? Remember, fear is a natural emotion and is there to protect you. So do a reality check and take care of yourself. and what is in need. Use your power and courage to overcome it and move on, enjoying life. Life is precious, so enjoy it. We'll be right back with the latest research about your memory.
Hello, I'm Dr. Fujian, and I have great news for you. I'm offering a special time-limited offer to anyone who's interested in online therapy or coaching sessions. I've developed the awareness integration model, which allows in only 12 weeks to raise your self-esteem and confidence and let go of your thoughts and emotions that produce depression and anxiety for you. So call today to schedule your online session and save $600. Call me today at 818-648-2140. That's 818-648-2140. Or go to www.fujian.com.
Well, latest research. Can you remember? Half of the time, I can't. But I just found out it's Sean's birthday. Yay! He's afraid for all of us to know how old he is. Yes, Sean, how old are you?
I will be 50 tomorrow.
Yay! Happy birthday to you. And it's not that bad. I handled it 8 years ago. I think it was more fearful to get to the 50 than it was actually live the 50. So if that's any consolation, Sean, I'm just telling you, don't worry, it's not that bad. It actually becomes like the wisdom is more. And you know what the concept that I decided at 50 was like, you know what? I'm too old for many of the stuff. I don't have to handle any of the stuff. And then I'm just, you know, I don't need to actually handle a lot of stuff. That was just my youth. So from there on, life became more careless. I don't know if you like that or not. But my anxiety actually went down. So that might help you. I'm going to talk about the latest research. So why is it that you can remember the name of your childhood best friend that you haven't seen in years, yet easily forget the name of a person you just met a moment ago? In other words, why are some memories stable over decades while others fade within minutes? Using a mouse model, Caltech researchers, which will be published in August 23rd, actually was published a couple of days ago, in the Journal of Science, have now determined that strong, stable memories are encoded by teams of neurons, all firing in synchrony, providing redundancy that enables these memories to persist over time. The research has implications for understanding how memory might be affected after brain damage, such as by stroke or Alzheimer's disease. The team developed a test to examine mice's neural activities as they learn about and remember a new place. In the test, a mouse was placed in a straight enclosure about 5 feet long with white walls. Unique symbols mark different locations along the walls. For example, a bold plus sign near the rightmost end and an angled slash near the center, sugar water, a treat for mice, was placed at either end of the track while the mouse explored. The researchers measured the activity of specific neurons in the mouse. Hippocampus, the region of the brain where new memories are formed that are known to encode for places when an animal was initially placed in the track. It was unsure of what to do and wandered left and right until it came across the sugar water. In these cases, single neurons were activated when the mouse took notice of a symbol on the wall. But over multiple experiences with the track, the mouse became familiar with it and remembered the locations of the sugar as the mouse became more familiar. More and more neurons were activated in synchrony by seeing each symbol on the wall. Essentially, the mouse was recognized where it was with respect to each unique symbol. To study how memories fade over time, the researchers then withheld the mice from the track for up to 20 days. Upon returning to the track after this break, mice that had formed strong memories encoded by higher numbers of neurons remembered the task quickly. Even though some neurons showed different activity, the mouse's memory of the track was clearly identified when analyzing the activity of large groups of neurons. In other words, using groups of neurons enabled the brain to have redundancy and still recall memories even if some of the original neurons fall silent or are damaged. Our guest just popped up in our video in the middle of our research. Hi, Behnoosh. Hi, sweetie, but let me finish this research for everyone and then we'll be right with you. So researchers explain, imagine you have a long and complicated story to tell. In order to preserve the story, you could tell it to five of your friends and then occasionally get together with all of them to retell the story and help each other fill in any gaps that an individual had forgotten. Additionally, each time you retell the story, you could bring new friends to learn and therefore help preserve it and strengthen the memory. In an analogous way, your own neurons help each other out to encode memories that will persist over time. So you can ask your friends to help you, or if you just keep doing it over and over again, all the neurons at one point will help you. Memory is so fundamental to human behavior that any impairment to memory can severely impact our daily life. Memory loss that occurs as part of the normal aging can be a significant handicap for senior citizens, as I'm getting to be and Sean is getting to be. Ha ha, Sean, I'm teasing you. Moreover, memory loss caused by several diseases, most notably Alzheimer's, has devastating consequences that can interfere with the most basic routines, including recognizing relatives or remembering the way back home. This work suggests that memories might fade more rapidly as we age because memory is encoded by fewer neurons. And if any of these neurons fail, the memory is lost. The study suggests that one day, designing treatments that could boost the recruitment of a higher number of neurons to encode a memory could help prevent memory loss. For years, people have known that the more you practice an action, the better chance you will remember it later. We now think that this is likely because the more you practice an action, the higher the number of neurons that are encoding the action. The conventional theories about memory storage postulates that making a memory more stable requires a strengthening of the connections to an individual neuron. The results suggest that increasing the number of neurons that encode the same memory enables the memory to persist for longer. So what do? We keep doing some inaction over and over and over so that we have it, the redundancy makes more neurons, and then you attach it to different aspects and different activities and different types of memories and different kind of senses, all five senses, so that you activate most of your neurons. That is how you get it, and then you keep going back and trying to create it. So I thought I'm completely losing my mind, but I figured out a way to keep it. So I'm so glad to have Behnoosh Babazani with us. Hi, Behnoosh. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Hi. So she's a social entrepreneur, public speaker, a certified life coach, and an author. She'll be published soon. And she has a degree in sociology from the University of San Francisco and a two-time survivor of a rare life-threatening blood disorder and a bone marrow transplant. Behnoosh has employed her unique and innovative life tools along with her positive mindset to beat all the odds. She's the founder and executive director of the nonprofit organization Project Marrow and shares her experience and tools throughout the country and through her public speaking engagement. Welcome to my show, Behnoosh.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Again, we're losing you. So I'm going to, Behnoush, this is what we're going to do, because I know that people are listening. We're going to, everyone, we're going to come back. We're going to give you some of sound bit bites about my practice. And we'll be right back with Behnoush. And we're going to try to figure out all the technical stuff. If not, we're going to have Behnoush call us on the radio so that we could actually have her voice. We'll be right back.
Sing out loud, sing out strong.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET 1490 AM.com.
Dr. Fujian Zain, and welcome to the Inner Voice Show. And we've been speaking to Behnoush Babzani, which is a social entrepreneur and a public speaker. She's telling us about her two-time diagnosis of tumors and even since childhood, age 12. So I know that you were talking about going to the hospital, but really your body was not making any cells. And then you were talking about your treatment. And tell us more about it.
So, yes, that was my first diagnosis, age 12, and that's basically where all Western-style treatment had given up on me, and I was getting blood transfusions into my body every 3 days. I was getting platelets every 4 days, and no longer was the medication working. They told me I have to do a bone marrow transplant. Now, this was in 1996, so in 1996, that was a pretty dangerous procedure. And almost a death sentence. So really what I was left with was see how long I can sustain on blood transfusions or do this terribly dangerous procedure. And my mother, who was my caregiver, really had to take the patient advocate reins and see what she could do for me, which is when we found a energy healer. And I laughed because at the time that was something almost comedic to me, that some man is going to heal me when this entire hospital team wasn't able to get me where I needed to go. Ultimately, he did. And I was healed and cured for 7 years. And then again, at the age of 19, where I was young, I was in college, I had my friends, I had my, you know, the life, I had the life. And then again, all the signs and symptoms came back. And that time, they basically told me there was no other option. I really had to do a bone marrow transplant.
Sean, are you hearing the voice pretty well, or is it still going in and out? All right, beautiful. So, Behnoush, you talked about Shafa healing and the man healing you. What are the tools that you were using to heal yourself, and what are the tools that this type of healing is really had worked on you?
So the second time around, I went back to the Shafa, the healing, and I wanted to use as much of it as possible. But the thing that had overcome my mind and my body was fear. And so it was fear. I went through with the Western style. I went through with the bone marrow transplant, and I was in heavy isolation. They basically emptied out my immune system with high dose chemotherapy. So in that isolation, I could have gone either way. The only thing that I had was my mind, and it was going one direction. You know, I thought this was it. This is it for me. All the statistics they told me, it's going to happen. I'm going to die. And then I caught myself and I went back and I thought, no, you know, I can do this. I have the tools available to me. I have the power within to be able to overcome this. And ultimately, you know, I did. And after that, I had several other health, you know, run-ins with health. I got another diagnosis a few years after that. And throughout my health, you know, encounters, they were told me repeatedly that with the high dose chemotherapy, with this new diagnosis, you're not going to be able to get pregnant. You won't be able to have a baby. And that was almost worse than the diagnosis for me. I really, you know, since the age of 8, I wanted to be a mother. And the pain, you know, it was constantly, they were serving me pain. They were serving me pain. And I realized very quickly that I needed to have the right mindset if I was going to survive this, if I was going to make it with all of these things that happened. And then, you know, after the second, third diagnosis, then there was a horrific car accident that I was in that, according to the California Highway Patrol, should have claimed my life and shocked him to no end that I and my partner survived that. So basically, I realized I was being put in a lot of crazy situations that were really...
Like life is testing you so much back and forth, testing your resiliency. And woman, you keep coming through no matter what. And hopefully this is the end. Like, you've proven you can come through anything. That's it.
You know, that was my goal. And throughout all this, I didn't, for the reason, and one of the biggest things, part that contributed to my healing was really my support system, mainly my mom. My mom was she was front and center. And anytime they gave me the negative, the statistics that they have to give you, you know, legally they have to cover themselves and say, you're probably going to die because A, B, and C. And she stood there as my shield and never let those words hit me. So part of it, I contributed to her, and she really supported me to get the right mindset. And she also never let me ask, why me? You know, why is this stuff happening to me? You know, play the victim. She didn't allow me to go there. I tried, but she didn't let me. And along with my energy healer, so he said to me one of the last times, I call him every single time something happens and I say, heal me. And the last time at the car accident, he said, what are you doing to position yourself for this stuff? And I was truly offended. I said, why would anybody willingly put themselves in these situations? And I really sat back and reflected, and I saw, wow, I did have a contribution to, you know, attracting these things to me. And if I can attract those negative things to me, perhaps I can work even harder and attract better things to happen to me.
So although you weren't going toward why me, what were you thinking that supported you to withhold all the pain, all the unknownness, all that was happening that completely could have destroyed your life or put you in a level of complete dependency or lose parts of your body and everything? So although you didn't say, why me, you said something that upheld you throughout the time.
Yes, the words and the things that they told me, you know, there was a higher percentage of death than there was survival, but they only served me the negative. And I had to, no matter what I would, in that situation, I had to choose to hear that the lower percentage that I was going to survive. I shifted my mind to the things that were going right, even though there was just a few, and I really work with those. So not to limit, I did work with an energy healer. So he did create a space for me to become healed, and I contributed to that. And that was really getting the mind right. And so I did so many tools, you know, I developed within, and with the help of this healer, you know, meditation, right? Meditation was huge for me. I was dealing with some of the most painful procedures that people, I mean, I tried to tell a story and the person got lightheaded and asked me to stop about it, and I had to take my mind through meditation to a place to tolerate that. And then to be able to breathe, you know, really through it, and then afterwards use my mind in the right way to flourish after and not drown by all the negative things that did happen to me.
Absolutely.
So what I was thinking was, how can I make this better? How did I attract this to myself, and how can I make it better? And I had to do it with a clear mind. So every single tool that I used was really on clearing all of the why me is just filler space. It wasn't going to do anything for me. It was just going to keep me in this stuck place of, you know, again, victimizing myself, leaving myself in this pain, and all the hard work that my mom and my loved ones were doing around me to lift me would have just gone to nothing.
Yeah. So you started Project Mero. Tell us about that.
That was also part of my healing. So part of what I could have done once I saw that my body was responding, the biggest thing I saw that I could do with my life is to serve. I realized, okay, I'm surviving these things. I have to serve. I have to spend the rest of my life doing what I can to support those who had either been through what I've been through or can learn from what I've been through. And when I was in the hospital, there were several patients who were getting massive amounts of chemo, just keeping idle, waiting for a bone marrow transplant. Having a bone marrow donor I had a sibling match. My brother was a perfect match for me. And that is extremely rare, right? There's people with four or five, six brothers and sisters who need a bone marrow transplant and they can't find a match. So I'm fully aware and entirely grateful for the fact that I had a match in my brother. But being in the hospital and seeing all these patients just waiting, not having that opportunity, I told myself, you know, when I get out of here, I will create an organized platform for people to understand and hear and learn more about the need for bone marrow donors on the national registry. Before this even happened to me, of course I wouldn't have thought about something like this. If someone would have told me to be a bone marrow donor, I mean, my jaw would have dropped and I thought, what, do you have to like cut open my bone? What do you have to do? This sounds insane, right? But in fact, it's extremely easy to just join the registry. To join the registry, you fill out an application and you swab your cheeks, and it goes to the National Donor Registry where they keep your information. And if a patient should match you, and I say if because people have been on the registry. I have people 25 years later are calling me and saying, or they call me, how come I haven't been matched? I really want to donate marrow. It's extremely hard to match someone. I mean, you're thinking about, it's a 10-point component off your white blood cells. That 10 out of 10, your DNA on that system has to match a complete stranger perfectly. So that's really rare. And if you do match someone, you have won the lottery. You have won the life-saving lottery. And when you do go to donate the bone marrow, there's actually two ways to do it. And the first one was the one that I did, which they only do 20% of the time, was to actually go into the donor's hip bone where the juicy bone marrow is, and that's where they take it out, but the donor is asleep and sedated and will not feel a thing. When you wake up, you feel like you've been at the gym for 5 days straight and you're just sore. It's a procedure that I did as a patient awake all the time, 10 times. I can't even tell you how many times I did it. And then 80% of the time, they're just doing peripheral blood stem cell donation, which is, if you've ever donated blood or platelets, you're hooked up to a machine. They're taking the blood out of one arm. If the machine's taking out your stem cells and the rest is coming right back to you. So it was my duty to share this information and get as many people, you know, on that registry and be available for patients. Right now, minorities are having a really hard time finding matches. Most of the donor registry is comprised of the Caucasian population. So we go into minority communities, educate them, and depending on the patient that we have, we go into their specific communities and let them know and try to fight all the stigmas around talking about illness. And, you know, again, people are afraid to talk about it, say that they're sick, and be seen as that victim. So there's a lot of work to do.
Yes, there is a lot of work to do. You also started your own YouTube channel, which you have from. I know you promised a new video every Monday. Everyone, as you're listening, there's going to be a new video every Monday. So where can they contact you? Where can they find you? One for your YouTube. The other one is your website, and then the Mero Project. So can you quickly tell us all about all of them?
Yes, absolutely. So I'm really excited to have launched my YouTube channel by popular demand. I started with a podcast and people said, please do a YouTube channel. We want to take these tools. And so I just launched it last week. It's a YouTube channel. You can find me at Behnoosh Babzani on YouTube. And that's where I share tools. And every week I share a new tool on, you know, they're really practical. They're practical tools on what you can instill in your daily activities, right? It's not something that you have to achieve some sort of crazy wisdom to be able to do these tools. You can use them every single day and really help with the mindset, mindfulness. I know this is a big thing right now. And then my Instagram is also Behnoosh Babzani, and my website is behnooshbabzani.com. And there you will also be able to link to the Project Mero page, or project, you can go straight to projectmero.org. And you can sign up on projectmero.org to be a donor. If you have any questions about it, I really would love to connect and share more about what that process is
Wonderful.
Like.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. I know you moved mountains to be with us today, so I thank you for that. With all the technical stuff that was going on. So thank you for your patience, and thank for all of our audience for all the patience. But it was important to have your message, which is, you know what? It doesn't matter what life brings in front of you, who you are, your mindset, with the way that you take care of things and you move forward with them. That is what becomes important, where you're going to heal yourself. And not only you can heal yourself, but then you become in a position of contributing to the world in so many different layers on their daily activities with your YouTube channel and the Project Mero, which is, you know, a whole different concept. So thank you for taking the time and being with us.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
So everyone, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Danny Zeno. He's an actor, producer, TV, radio host, combat choreographer, and motion picture and television industry. We'll be right back.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zain. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it. Hello, I'm Dr. Fujian, and I have great news for you. I'm offering a special time-limited offer to anyone who's interested in online therapy or coaching sessions. I've developed the awareness integration model, which allows in only 12 weeks to raise your self-esteem and confidence and let go of your thoughts and emotions that produce depression and anxiety for you. So call today to schedule your online session and save $600. Call me today at 818-648-2140. That's 818-648-2140, or go to www.fujian.com.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Inner Voice. And I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I'm excited to have Danny Zaino with us, actor, producer, TV, radio host, right, combat choreographer for the motion picture television industry. He owns Living the Dream Production, which produces the digital media publicity and promotions for martial arts, showbiz, TV, radio, and magazine. His latest shows are The Road to Hollywood and Hardcore Cooking. Oh my God, he cooks and teaches all of us Italian food. How cool is that? And the documentary film Born to Compete, which is all of his families. So Danny is a professional martial artist with over four decades of dedication to the industry, currently holding the rank of Kudan, ninth degree black belt, and is a founder of the American Japanese, and you know I'm going to mess up all these words. Say it. Oki.
Okinawa.
Yay! Say all of the Goju karate.
I'm a Goju-Ryu grandmaster.
Wonderful.
Goju-Ryu martial arts.
And
but I've studied so many martial arts. I'm studying close to 50 years.
Wow. And you served in the United States Army as the military police officer.
Yeah.
And advocate for the PTSD program for, yes, traumatized combat veterans and their families. Welcome to my show.
Thank you. I think PTSD... if they have a PTSD program for the families and the guy that has PTSD, that's the better program for PTSD, because the wife needs to understand what's going on in order for me to understand her, or she to understand me, or your girlfriend or whatever. So it's good when family members go to PTSD meetings that the government has. The government needs more spouse meetings and counseling for the spouses, so they can take care of the guys that have severe PTSD.
So for people who are listening, PTSD means post-traumatic stress disorder, and people who have trauma, and obviously people who have been in the military and serving, and the veterans have had the experience of being in humongous traumatic experiences. And obviously when they come back, they do need to get treated and help with that. And I think this is what you're saying, Danny, that it isn't just the person who comes back and or has gone through the trauma, but this trauma extends itself to everyone around you and your wife and family and everyone.
They don't, when you come back from anything, they don't sit you down, you know. It's like getting out of jail. It's like getting out of something, and you know they don't help you at all. They just say, like, you know, thank you. Mm-hmm. That's about it.
That's about it. And then you have to face the rest of it.
Yeah, but I raised my hand. I served my country. I didn't plan on to have PTSD. I'm in my 50s. I has, you know, hit really bad times. Mm-hmm. And I'm 59 now, so it was pretty bad. Pretty bad, you know, but I love entertainment. That's kind of like lifted me.
Your medicine.
Yeah, it is my medicine.
Yes.
Besides the veteran's medicine.
Yeah. So tell us about the resiliency of coming back. Nobody told you anything except thank you, bye-bye. And then you had to pull through and go toward the entertainment.
Well, number one, the internet. You know, I had a comrade got his throat sliced, but he lived.
Oh.
One of my friends. And so I found him. And then I had a childhood friend who told me what happened too. So a lot of different pieces for a lot of different years to figure out what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought I was living at one place and I was living at three places. And I don't, you know, it was secret. It was right before, you know, right after Vietnam. 79.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was Korea. I was at the DMZ.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and I was at military police. So if they were going to do anything stupid, I had to go.
And then when you came back, it seems like you had to put all of these pieces together and create a family and move forward.
It was kind of embarrassing coming back because I'm a man without a war. And I was very highly trained. You know, I was on the Army karate team. I was a police officer for a few years, so, you know, I'm from New York. You know, my father was from Bensonhurst, my mom from Queens and Corona. So I stripped up upbringing, Italian-American upbringing. We had a pizzeria, so.
Yeah.
But the PTSD program said, go ahead with your cooking show. You know, do something fun.
Yes.
Like that, where, you know, I turned my house kind of into a studio.
Yeah.
And then I'm a great cook, so... I'm just doing little sound bites, but I have Kim Kahan is my
producer.
Director. No, director. And he's 90 years old.
Wow.
And he's Charles Bronson's stunt double. I've been with him 10 years. Yeah, I'm an instructor at the ranch and a ranch hand. So shout out to the Kahanas, most famous stunt family in the world.
Wow.
So, and plus he's been in combat and stuff like that. My father's dead. He picked up that I was a little out there and said, you know, started explaining to me because he was in the Korean War, you know. And I got a medal, one medal, that's it.
See wow.
That one?
Yes.
It. Yeah, that ain't shit. Everybody else has a zillion medals.
Well,
so
I think,
each time, so they didn't give out nothing.
Well, I think it's this the courage to, like you said, to put your hand up and serve. It takes a lot of courage, and takes a lot of courage when you come back to recreate life in a way that you did, and put yourself into a place where you can feel success, where you and your whole family system can come together and create enjoyment, not only for yourself, but for everyone around you. I think that's the beauty that I'm hearing, that you took what happened and turned it around where you created productions, entertainment, fun, and life.
I worked with a lot of children. I worked with kids, maybe 3,000 kids a year. I used to teach at the YMCA, community center, and stuff like that. But as I got a little older, my Army karate team stuff came out, and I was very disciplined. I was like a Michael Jackson dad. I had no idea I had PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
I had no clue. I didn't know what PTSD was. You know, people started telling me I was acting strange. I didn't think I was acting strange, you know? And so, you know, I didn't know I had this medal, which doesn't really mean shit, just means I was a participant.
Well, I mean, you certainly had amnesia when you came back, and different parts of your system was not integrated, and it could have been very scary also for you not to know that.
There. Yeah. They killed close to 500-600 college students.
Yeah.
Came flying in, you know, paratroopers.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty bad situation.
So the part that I'm also hearing, that there were a lot of people who loved you. So when you came back, people looked and said, you're not in the right place. And then guided you.
Well, I had my colonel contact me because I was a karate star. I didn't realize I made an impact, that much of an impact. And then he started trying to tell me how proud it was to be in the military and all the other accomplishments. And so, and then some other, for 30 years, I never communicated with any of my Army buddies. I blocked it out.
Wow.
Yeah, I worked three jobs. They said people with PTSD can work three jobs, can be super successful. It's just when they're alone, that's the problem.
Yeah.
When big, huge production ends, now they're by themselves and they crash.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they still need to be in counseling. Or the, you know, suicide, you know, a lot of, there's 23 to 25 guys offing themselves a month.
Yes.
You know, and there's a direct line to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a veteran and you're getting screwed, you know, through President Trump, it's a great thing. If you feel something, the advocate department, you know, a lot of times they say, you know, at the hospital, we can't do this. It's the guys who fought in wars that own those hospitals,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the people, when they get their heads get too big, you know, then it's not good.
Mm.
You know, like you can't get this done. You can't get that done when you really can, but they want to screw your head.
So it's more of knowing the lines of how to take care of yourself. If you come back and you think like you're not being taken care of.
PTSD, I can see it in the young guys coming back from you know, Iraq or wherever.
Yes.
I can see it. They're really pissed off. And that's the sign right there. When they're pissed off, they're mad, you know, because probably the best fighting guys are sent to the front to do it, to do the job. They pick them in boot camp. They pick me.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting a lot of fist fights. It would march. I was pissed off. I wanted to get away from my father at a pizzeria. I wanted to get away from the pizzeria. I loved him, but he was, you know, I had to get, I didn't want to, you know, I've been working for years, you know, flipping pizzas, making dough. So I joined the military when I was 17. We moved from New York to Florida, and my father had a pizzeria, and then I had a big restaurant when I got out, a big Italian restaurant.
So what made you want to be an actor and a producer?
I was on the Army karate team performing. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a tool for the military. I was I would go to the high schools and they break stuff over my body, and I was in the military, and then try to get people to join the military. So a recruiting tool. Mm-hmm. You know, I fought, and I realized, you know, the training from the military is different. You always have to be number one or you'll die. So they're training for karate, for competitions. We had a competition team. But in all reality, if they get deployed someplace, they needed to use that to survive.
Right.
So my karate team, everybody had to take first place or you're not allowed to speak to me. So I was a real asshole. Won a lot.
But it's also the concept of your movie, the documentary that says, you know, born to compete kind of, right. Because what you're saying is you compete in order to win, because if you don't, you're going to die. It's like, well, that's how you have to really look at how to be great.
I was abusive. I didn't understand what was going on. And every time they asked me about questions for PTSD, I lied to them, because when my one kid turned 18, I told them the truth and they put me in the PTSD program. Mm-hmm. So that's how that went. So for a lot of years, every time they asked me this question, I was teaching karate to children, you know, at YMCA, and I didn't want, you know, them to, you know, come to my house, take my children or something like that. But when my kids turned 18, I, started analyzing what was going on, you know, and my family kind of didn't understand for a long, long time. And if you lose your family over PTSD, it's tough.
It is tough. So we got a couple more minutes. I really want the audience to also know who you are today and who you are with your production and your latest shows. How can people find you and where to see you?
I'm Danny Zano, Crave It Hollywood. I love everything. I love old Hollywood. I love fashion. Mm-hmm. And so I got 6 shows left, Road to Hollywood. I filmed in the last 5 years, New York, Florida, New Jersey, and all parts of California. So I'm going to be filming when I go to California in about another week. I'm going to Grumman's Theater, Red Carpet. I'm stoked. I'm psyched. Wow. I think everybody should follow their dream. So the thing I say is, I'm in my PTSD program. I'm running my program. And I'm on my medicine, and, you know, I got a lot of important people in California I'm looking to see. But PTSD is a tough one, you know what I mean? So,
yeah. So where can they find you and see the Road to Hollywood?
Martial Arts Showbiz TV Network.com.
Okay. And then is it the same place that you have the hardcore cooking?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you you change your whole house to a studio for cooking. Yeah. And you teach everybody the tips of Italian food.
What I want to do is have everybody turn their kitchen into a pizzeria, and I'll show them. Because I'm a marble and stone mason and tile marble contractor, 35 years. So I want to show everybody in their oven how they can make pizzas. You got to get the oven really hot, and then I'll show them how to do sauce and the whole nine yards. Yeah. And comedy stunts, you know, comedians.
Where can we see that?
Well, the same place.
Say it one more time.
You say it, Truth.
MASBTVnetwork.com.
Yay.
Or technical person there.
Technical person, yes. Three. So thank you so much for coming on my show. Okay. Thank you for your transparency. Thank you for sharing your vulnerable and your success. I think that's the beauty of knowing that everyone has both sides. Some of us go through a lot harder time, but I think that's the beauty, that when you go so down that it takes you the other side of resiliency to come up. And I love talking about the idea of how we can turn around our life, because I think that people go through different issues in their life. Right. And some of it, it's not up to them. Some of it, they actually create it. But the beauty is not to stay there and learn whatever it is that we can and bring and contribute to the world. And I was so lucky that both of our guests today really have come from a place of pain and have come up and contributed to the world. So thank you, everyone. And for all of you who are listening and watching, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. Happy birthday, Sean, for being 50.